The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening. Welcome to Sports Talk 1240 this Sunday evening, April 17th. It's Raymond Mora, Uncle Sanya here in the station. That's right. We're back for after a 1 month and a half break. Yeah, we've been busy, but we're here. And we're taking on for the last hour of Sports Talk 1240. So we are here tonight talking about the New York Mets. Of course, the NBA playoffs have started, so we're going to talk about that because there's a lot of interesting matchups that we're definitely going to do in the half an hour. And also, the New York Jets schedule. I know it's early, Jet fans, but we need to figure out about the schedule because when I saw it, I was just like, this is a death sentence to the Jets. But we'll talk about that more. So, Unqua, as Brian calls Christina Acker from New York Daily News, we will talk to her about the Mets as of right now. There's a couple of things I'm looking at the Mets, and specifically the Mets fans, because the Mets fans in general are just they're freaking out right now for no reason, and it's early April. What do you think of that?
I think that the sky is blue, water is wet, and Mets fans find a reason to get over-anxious about every little thing. I do understand, and I've always understood that once the season starts, yeah, it's all real. And a loss in April can hurt you as much as a loss in August in some cases. But as far as I'm concerned, you just got started. Not many teams that shoot right out of the gate are always there at the end. It doesn't always happen that way, and it doesn't need to be the case for the Mets, particularly because the NL East, yes, you have Washington and Bryce Harper doing Bryce Harper things, but then who else do you have? The Marlins, who kind of are fluky in and out, and two rebuilding teams in the Phillies and the Braves. Cool out. It's not that serious yet. Call me in June.
Yeah, certainly. And we'll talk about more. Actually, right now we have Christine Acker here on the phone line with us. Christy, it's Raymond Unqua. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. First off, I wanted to ask you one question. And you know, I've been following you on Twitter and all this updates with DeGrom. With the DeGrom situation, is it being taken care of right now? When will he return from his family emergency?
I don't think that's known right now. They're hoping that they can bring the baby home from the hospital maybe tomorrow.
All right.
I think that's optimistic. He will definitely throw a bullpen in Port St. Lucie, or actually, I'm sorry, he'll throw a simulated game in Port St. Lucie on Tuesday. So I don't think he's going to be back before the end of next week.
Well, certainly his pitching, especially where the Mets are right now. But, you know, speaking of the Mets, you know, today they won with Steve Matz. You know, people can actually calm down with Matz and not dropping him to the minor leagues after one start. But what's happening to the Mets right now? Because it looks like they're the team that had a championship hangover, but they didn't win the championship last year.
Well, I think it was more of a World Series hangover.
Yeah.
And I also think, honestly, it has more to do with their schedule the first week of the season than anything else. That was a really crazy schedule. 3 days off in 1 week. I mean, baseball players don't like one day off that, you know, in 2 weeks in a row. So having 3 days off that first week really kind of threw them. I think it certainly hurt Matz, his first start. I think he hadn't had enough work. So you saw that, and I think you saw the difference today when he was on regular rest.
Yeah.
So to me, it's more about that. Matt Harvey has a mechanical issue I think he needs to work on. There may be a little bit of a hangover with him. I mean, remember, he was coming off Tommy John last season. He pitched more innings than any other pitcher coming off of Tommy John. So that may be some of it, but I also think there's a mechanical issue they're dealing with. And I just think hitters and pitchers need a rhythm, and they had no rhythm with that first week of, you know, days off and how stilted it was.
Christy, it's Unqua. Happy Sunday to you. I want to ask you about how the middle infield defense looks so far with Cabrera and Walker. To put it succinctly, how much better and more improved are they from who the Mets had last year with Murphy and the rotation of Flores and Tejada as well?
Well, Cabrera is a veteran professional shortstop. He's got good hands. He surprised me. His range is better than I thought it was. you know, Walker is a professional second baseman. Last year with Daniel Murphy, you know, it was an adventure at times with defense. You're gonna get the expected plays from them on defense, and you get some really good plays too. So I think it's been a nice improvement for the Mets in middle of infield defense.
What do you think this missing right now for the Mets? Because, you know, a lot of these Mets fans are panicking, especially what the record is right now. But you think there's anything that's missing with the team itself that maybe will elevate them? You know, you said before, like, they had an earlier schedule with all these road games, only had 3 days off. But you think it'll get better as the weeks go by?
Yeah, I think you're already seeing them starting to get better. But I also think they have to get through this month because they have a day off every week, you know? I mean, I think you'll start to see them turn the corner in this week. You know, I think it's just way too early to panic, and it's way too early to say what they're missing. The teams are just forming themselves. The only thing that concerns me is that the Nationals are off and running and building a lead already.
Makes sense.
And that is indeed early. Christy, Terry Collins, last year, he was, you know, he almost seemed like he was on his way out. And all of a sudden, he's back as one of the great managers. Have you noticed really a continuance in what in the culture that helped them win last year, and has it really showed up this year?
The culture, you mean from Terry Collins?
Correct.
You know, I mean, he has the same attitude with his players he always has. He's turned himself into a player's manager. They like to play for him. He has their back, and that's the same culture they had last year. It's no different than it was.
So to follow up on that, you figure that his message to the team is just to stay the course because it's pretty early, correct?
Yeah. I mean, for what, 11 games in, I think it's a little early to panic.
You think you know, us, the media, you think we're putting pressure on Terry Collins with all these expectations for the team?
I don't think we put pressure on him. I certainly think he had higher expectations for their start this year. I think he got to the World Series last year. He wants to finish the job this year, so he's putting pressure on himself. There's definitely more expectations. There's definitely more media around the team this year. You know, ESPN first game of the season, that wasn't happening the first 4 years of Terry Collins, you know, managership with the Mets. It's definitely a different situation, but, you know, he's handling it.
How is he managing with the David Wright, you know, pretty much they got a day off, but, you know, with this back problem and all that and on the field, like, in terms of him throwing the ball, the sidearm, how's he dealing with all that, managing him?
I think he's doing a good job. He talks to him. I mean, David Wright has a very big presence with this team. He can't just bench the captain of the Mets. You have to talk to him. You have to negotiate with him. You have to make him understand that it's for the good of the team. And he's done a good job of that. He's kept an open dialogue with David through this whole process. And I think keeping David on board with the process of resting him is just as important as resting him. And Terry's done a great job of that.
Speaking of David Wright, as you've seen him grow and evolve throughout the years, what are some of the things that he does with his team that just sort of make him the man where the Mets are concerned?
In terms of him being a captain?
In terms of him being the captain, in terms of just the things that he does on and off the field that really makes players rally around him or respect him.
He's well-liked in the clubhouse. He's well-respected. He has a good way of dealing with younger players. He talks to them quietly. He guides them. He's good at, you know, being someone that they can talk to. He will talk to players. He's not one to call a meeting. He doesn't make senseless, you know, statements in the press. He stands before the press when there's, you know, questions that need to be asked. You know, he's a stand-up guy in the clubhouse, and that goes a long way. He's been a, you know, a star in the league for years, and younger players respect that. So he has a lot of respect in that clubhouse. He has a lot of respect from his manager, and, you know, those players will pretty much do anything for David Wright.
Talking with Christine Acker here on Sports Talk 1240. You can follow her at Acker_NYDN. Also, I wanted to talk about one specific player because it's funny how in New York, when you want to have a player back, you want him so badly. But when he starts to play terrible, they just start booing at him as if he doesn't exist.
Air quotes over terrible.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at Jonas Cespedes, and, you know, it's so far, it's not a star for him. And he is what he is. He hits a couple home runs and RBIs. But it's, I'm saying it more of like, should people be more, I guess, not too hard on him, considering that what he did last year for them, putting him into the World Series?
You know what? I'm never going to tell fans that they have to cheer or they can't boo someone. They paid their price for admission. They can do what they want. You know, again, I'm going to go into this. You know, Cespedes is a streaky hitter. He needs a rhythm. He needs a flow. That first week and the second, you know, it wasn't a good week to get into a flow. Did he play bad? Yeah. I mean, he wasn't hitting well. He was chasing pitches. But you know what? You saw that at times last year, too, so I don't know what you expected. You know, he is a streaky hitter. He's going to hit you home runs. That's what he does. But you know what? You've got to live through those bad streaks as well. So I'm never going to tell you you can't boo a player or you should cheer a player, but you should take into consideration what you asked for.
That's true.
Christy, you saw Michael Conforto last year in Cincinnati for all the All-Star Game festivities. How have you seen him sort of progress into now forcing Terry Collins' hand in terms of putting him in the lineup?
I think he's always been the same hitter. He's just learned the major leagues better. He's a good hitter. He's a very good player. You know, when the offense is struggling, you've got a solid contact hitter there. He's got some power. Why not put him up in the lineup? I've had several scouts tell me last year it's just a matter of time before he's the number three hitter on this Mets team. Well, the time is now. He's hitting, he's producing. There's no reason he shouldn't be in that, you know, position. He's, I think this week he went, what? He went 5-for-12 over three games in the number three hole. He's pretty comfortable there. And I think you're going to see him there for a while.
So where do we see this Mets team right now? You know, they got an upcoming series against the Phillies. What do you think we should expect from them?
I think you're going to see a better series against the Phillies than you did last weekend. I think they're... pitching is coming into form. You've got Noah Syndergaard going tomorrow night. That's always a good sign. Their bats are coming around. They're starting to get into a rhythm. I think you're going to see a better series. I think the Phillies are better than people expected them to be, even me. They have shown me a little more than I thought they had. So it's not going to be as easy as I thought, but I do think you're going to see the Mets start to come into form.
Well, as always, Christy, thank you for being on the show. Interesting stuff about the Mets. I'll always follow you on Twitter, retweeting stuff about what's happening. We'll be in touch.
Oh, I appreciate it. Take care.
All right, take care. Thank you. All right, well, you know, speaking from all that and looking where the Mets are right now and all the fans are just panicking and freaking out about everything that they see, they're still, you know, it's early in the season. We shouldn't really rate them until mid-May, early June.
And I think what Christy said was really important in terms of fans wanting player. I mean, fans paying the price for admission. You know, I understand that and I get that. But I think the point that really stands out with me where she's concerned is that she said that players need to be able to get into a rhythm. And there is no way you can go from spring training ball where you don't know who you're hitting. You could be facing a prospect who's trying to make his way to the show. You could be facing a major league journeyman who's trying to get back into baseball, period. It's not like you're going up against the same rotation of high-quality pitching game in and game out. And the Mets, they just got started.
Yeah, they got started. Like any other team, they got started. I mean, that's the MLB season for you. What are you going to have in the first couple weeks of MLB season? You're going to have bad teams jump on the good teams, and you have good teams get off at slow starts. Looking at the Mets, I consider them to be a good team. And as of right now, they're at a slow start, just like the Yankees. But we're talking about the Mets right now, about the Yankees.
We don't need to talk about the Yankees.
Right, the
Yankees are trash. We don't need to talk about
it's still early, like I said. And,
I don't care. That whole ticket fiasco in the beginning of the season, the Yankees are trash.
They're not trash, okay?
They're still good. For
right?
What they did, for the statements they made,
but they're
regarding,
winning games.
I don't care. They're still trash.
They're trash.
You can't do that. You can't do that. And I'm mad that they're hijacking part of this very productive New York baseball conversation. Because when you tell your fans that, you know what, this secondary ticket seller that we should be using to actually get people into the seats, so that when the camera does the whole picture to home plate view that they always do, all the seats aren't empty. Instead of actually embracing StubHub, they say, you know what? We don't want our season ticket holders to sit next to people who might not have paid full price for the ticket. What kind of nonsense?
But they're the Yankees.
The Yankees are trash for that.
They could do whatever they want.
The Yankees are trash for that.
They're not trash.
They are trash for that. They are. Because that's so wrong.
And then yet they still get a lot of money.
It is.
So what's the big deal?
That, but again, for the love of money. You do what you want to do if you're the Yankees. I just think that the way they handled that particular situation
makes them trash.
That's
one thing doesn't just make them trash.
Yes, that's how people get into the stadium. Look, can we get? Let's get back to the Mets, please.
You expect that the Mets will do the same thing for all we know.
Let's get back to all right. The Mets,
well, speaking of the Mets, like I said, it's a long season. But like looking at the season, there's 162 games. Why would you panic at the 12th or even the 13th game of the season? It's so many games left.
Send Mets down to the minors for one start. Keeping in mind, this is Mets' first full season. I think we in New York, we have a very bad habit of expecting that every single team, whether it be off of a great run or whether the fact that they're, quote, kids, we expect them to be so much greater and so much more ready because of this, that, and the third. Here's what's most important to realize. The core of this team is still pretty young.
Exactly.
Between Mats, who is just starting his first full MLB season, Jacob DeGrom, Matt Harvey, and we're just talking about the pitchers. We haven't even gotten to Michael Conforto, and yet there are still veterans in there. Hello, Asdrubal Cabrera and Neil Walker. And by the way, I pilloried those signings. I thought the Neil Walker deal was, it didn't make sense to me. And I wanted the opportunity for Wilmer Flores, who I think did an admirable job last year. I wanted him to you know, sort of grab the reins. But you know what? Those moves have worked out because up the middle, their defense is so much better.
But then you see all these Mets fans just booing at players because they don't play up to their par or expectations. Let me ask you something, all you New York fans out there, and I include myself too. We're hard on our players, but maybe that's why they don't want to come here and play in the first place. Because you see any other state in this country, they all root for their players regardless of what happens. If they lose or they win, they still root for them. But this is why we don't get nice things. Maybe this is why the Mets haven't won a championship in 30 years. Maybe this is why the Knicks haven't won a championship in 40 years.
Whoa!
Maybe this is why the Rangers haven't won in 20 years.
Whoa!
Well, the Rangers are still good, but I'm saying it in terms of we hate on our great players.
Whoa!
And maybe that's why we don't get anything.
Here? How did we get here? We just went from telling people to chill out about the Mets, and all of a sudden it turns into a rant against New York fans. Wait a second. There's nothing like playing in New York. Nothing like it ever. And yes, there are times where you just got to look at New York as a whole and just go easy, easy. But
too spoiled.
I'll give you that.
And you know why? It's because of the Yankees. Because of the Yankees, every other team has high expectations.
Please pull back and just realize that we can't claim that every team. We can't claim the only great players want to go to New York anymore.
Now,
with the way that the media works, especially with the advancement, especially where baseball is concerned, of the regional networks airing most of the baseball games and the partnership with Major League Baseball and MLB.TV, the advantage that New York had, they don't have anymore. Especially if you talk about weather, if you talk about taxes, if you talk about commute. If you want to know why Cliff Lee, he could have come to the Yankees. He very well could have come to the Yankees when he was a free agent back in, I believe it was 2008.
Yeah.
But he orchestrated a trade, and he ended up staying with Texas for a bit before going back to Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a, quote, smaller city, and technically the Yankees were the reigning champ the year after the Phillies were, so they were the more recent champ. But New York doesn't have the same appeal that it used to. And that's because everything sort of everything's sort of linear now. And I think that what you say about the fan bases and the way that they sort of attack their players, I think that's a fair point. I just don't think it's the only one.
That's not fair, though. And you hear comments on Twitter, people say, oh, Cespedes doesn't belong in the field because he makes the stupidest plays.
But
and it's
we,
like,
but,
really?
But we have, but,
really?
But at every at, in every fan base, there is that very vocal minority that plainly have no clue what they're talking about. Because I think if we were in Dallas, we'd still be having the same conversation.
Exactly.
If we were even in Milwaukee, I think we'd be having the same conversation. Miami, same conversation. Even Oklahoma City, same conversation. So I don't think that's a problem that's limited to New York. I think it just gets more amplified because it is New York.
Well, we will see. But I'm just telling you one thing. Mets fans need to relax and just stop booing their star players when they're trying to win the game. And first of all, he even got you to a World Series last year. If it weren't for him, you guys would be
laughing stock
of the league.
I don't know about laughing stock because they were still a decent team. They were a wild. I think without him, they were a wild card team. With him, they won the East. And also because the Nationals imploded at the end.
Yeah, I'm assuming we'll see what happens.
And can I just say, even though it sounds ridiculously like Donald Trump, I am all for Bryce Harper's total attitude about making baseball fun again.
Well, it should be.
Can I just say that might be the single most beautiful thing about this 2016 baseball season? Because the funniest thing about 2015, where when we talk about, you know, fan sensibilities and stuff, that's where we finally got to see the young guns and even some of the older guns show emotion, have fun, and people weren't really used to it. Go back to the bat flip in Toronto. Oh, my goodness. The big conversation. And I think the funniest thing is when the opposing pitcher who got rocked was like, yeah, I think he was showing me up. Couple things wrong with that statement. First and foremost, to one of the best sluggers of this decade, you chose to throw a fastball into his wheelhouse, number one. Number two, you're on the road. Number three, it was a late inning homer, bottom of the seventh, that effectively won the game. And Toronto hadn't won a postseason series since they won the World Series back in 1993. So, your words mean nothing.
Exactly.
And then the funny thing was, going back to Bryce Harper, that fight he had in the dugout, people think that it was just a matter of two, quote, hotheads going at it. No, part of it was because Papelbon, look, it was the Nationals-Orioles series, okay? Come south of me to the Beltway for a second. Papelbon had thrown behind Manny Machado because he admired a homer. Bryce Harper, postgame, says, you know, I don't think that's such a great idea. The man hit a homer, let him admire it. And then that kind of boiled into the whole Bryce Harper didn't hustle down the line, blah, 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 blah. Baseball's supposed to be fun. People are supposed to have fun. Jose Fernandez jaws at some of the opponents that he faces, and it's all in fun. Every other country around the world knows how to have fun with baseball. If you go to the Dominican, if you go to Venezuela, even if you go to Japan, if you go to Taiwan, even if you go to Holland, where baseball sort of kind of being bigger now, especially after the World Baseball Classic in 2006. Everyone needs to loosen up when it comes to baseball. It's supposed to be gun. It's supposed to be a game. It's supposed to be fun. That's why people don't want to. That's why kids don't want to play baseball anymore. They see people get mad about bat flips and fist pumps after big strikeouts, and it's boring. Why not go play football where you can shimmy down the sideline to the end zone for a touchdown? Why not play basketball when you can stick three fingers to the dome? Can we just lighten up on everything, please?
Well, you know, everything wants to be old school now these days, so you know how everybody gets hyped up for the one.
There's nothing wrong with
flip.
There's nothing wrong with playing old school, but sheesh, let's have some fun. Let's make it count. Let's make it mean something.
And so we'll have more fun. We'll take a little break here. When we come back, we'll be talking about our favorite Kobe Bryant moment, and then the NBA playoffs, because this is a lot of interesting stuff that we got to know, especially about two specific teams that I'm concerned about in the playoffs. On Sports Talk, 1240 AM.
You're listening to Sports Talk, 1240, right here on Long Island's AM, 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240. Unko Azania here at, Raymond Moore here. I said Unko Azania across the side.
You lead with the headliner, yeah, baby. Exactly. That's how we do it. You lead with the headliner.
Yep, certainly. And we started off here talking about, before we talk about NBA playoffs, I wanted to get emotional here and inspiring here and focus on what Kobe Bryant, because a guy who retired, who I looked up to since I was a little kid, even though I was a Knicks fan, he killed my Knicks. But constantly, it's a guy that I looked up to for inspiration and being focused and what I want to do. And I want to say the one moment I liked about him was when, this also when he was like pretty much close to the end of his career, but against the Raptors, he had 3 3-point shots to tie it basically, and then one in overtime. But just him showing his greatness on taking these impossible 3-point shots over people draping on him and everything, it was just incredible. It's one of my moments.
You know what I think? Kobe Bryant might be the single most misunderstood superstar of this generation.
What makes you say that?
Oh, here's the thing. Michael Jordan got away with half the stuff he got away with for a couple reasons. Number one, the media loved him. The media would do anything to get on his good side, even when he did some really ugly things.
Yep. Gambling.
And
I'll get down to that list, but yeah, I'm just saying gambling.
Watch that retirement. Number two, I think what makes him most misunderstood, it's not just that he did some of the stuff that Michael did, it's the fact that everything sort of seemed to revolve around him even when it didn't. I mean, yes, the breakup between him and Shaq was ugly. It was public. It seemed like that team was unstoppable, and they really were for about 5 years.
Yep.
There was no touching them. But what people sort of missed, while they said, oh, nobody wanted to play with Kobe, Kobe wasn't just putting up numbers. His teams were less than decent, and they would still win games. If you put, and this is why I think, even though I'm not a big LeBron James fan, I think he deserves some credit as well. Those are the only two superstars, I think, in recent memory that can take a team of forgottens and make something happen with it. Because Kobe Bryant had to deal with a team that included but wasn't limited to Chris Mim, Smush Parker, and those are the only two names I remember, only because I loved Bryant. Actually, I hated playing the Lakers because I had a friend who was a big Kobe Bryant fan. He'd always pick him, and Kobe would whoop me in 2K6. I think it was, 2K6. But
don't get me started on Kwame Brown either.
Yes! I forgot about Kwame Brown.
Kwame Brown.
I forgot about Kwame Brown.
Yeah.
But the thing about Kobe Bryant that people don't quite understand is that he really wanted it. And he was unapologetic about it. Because in an age of branding and an age of where everybody has to be the nice guy, Kobe straight didn't care. In fact, I remember reading about an exchange he had with Dwight Howard when Dwight Howard just signed. Dwight called him on the phone and said, "Hey, Kobe, what's going on? My knee's at 80, about 80%. Kobe said, "That's cool. We need you at 100. Bye." He didn't care. He wanted to win.
Exactly.
And the numbers speak for themselves. And can I just say, I'll be honest with you, the very night that he dropped 60, yeah, I was dead in the water. I was really dead in the water. I was that tired. All I know is that I rolled over and I saw the press conference afterward. And then it cut back to SportsCenter and he said, "Kobe Bryant, wow, way to go out on the top, 60 points. I thought I was hearing things. Then I checked everything, including the fact that he hit the game leading. He pretty much wheeled the Lakers back into that game.
Yep.
It's a game they had no business winning. And again, who was he surrounded by? Rookies. Did they have the year they wanted to? No.
Yeah,
but this isn't. But this isn't 32. This isn't prime Kobe Bryant. Nowhere near it. But he went out like he is, and I think it's fittingly told in the way Shaq himself said it. Shaq said, "Kobe, I dare you to get 50." He got 60. Shaq said, "That blankety blank got 60. That's a bad blankety blank." And bad, when there are blankety blanks, really there's only one phrase that fits right there. Couldn't have said it better myself, Shaq.
One of the greatest players in this, you know, NBA history. He'll be remembered. He'll still be, hopefully still be around probably. But, you know, he's a great player that a lot of players look up to.
He might be one heck of a coach, honestly.
He'll just destroy people in practices if he's a coach, though. I think we all agree with that.
That would be fun.
And you can call in at 631-888-8811 on any questions about the Mets or Kobe Bryant as of right now. But we got to talk about the playoffs right now because, you know, it started Saturday. And I always consider this on my Twitter. This is the best weekend of my year with NBA playoffs on this day. It's Saturday and Sunday, and it's still going on right now. I believe the Spurs are up as of right now because of Grizzlies. But as of right now, let's look at these matchups right now because the Warriors – and the Rockets in the Western Conference.
Sweep.
That's well.
Skip it.
Without Curry,
it's
see.
A sweep.
Yeah,
just
I don't want to talk about it. All right. Clippers and Blazers. Now, this is an interesting matchup because you have Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin coming back, of course, and you got J.J. Redick who had a career year this year. And, you know, these teams, they're going to be a good team. I don't know how far they're going to go. But you got a Blazers team who just came out of nowhere when they lost four out of their five starters this season. Replace them with pretty much second-year players and people they got, young players, and they're the fifth seed in the Western Conference. And you got to give Coach Terry Stotts a lot of credit because he pretty much made this team relevant. Damian Lillard's having a career year as well, as long as C.J. McCollum, who should be most improved player of the year. Although
shouldn't even be close.
Well, though Stephen Curry might have something to do about that. But
That's true, too.
But looking at this series, I feel like you're going to be 6 or 7, but I'm probably going to pick the Clippers in this situation.
I'm not going to lie to you. Last year didn't really change my mind that much about the Clippers. In fact, last year sort of showed me that the Clippers, they're a very nice collection of players. But that's about it.
Chris Paul has to be selfish. That's the only way they're going to go far.
Which is weird, isn't it?
Because he's
one of the best at just moving the ball. But yeah. What I think that really gets looked over regarding Portland is the fact that we thought, particularly me, I thought that Damian Lillard was going to be mad because he had to shoulder most of the load himself.
Yeah.
It turns out, number one, thanks to C.J. McCollum and the emergence of players like Myers Leonard and even Noah Vonleh, give Lillard the ball. And he's not a better point guard than Westbrook. Let me say that up front. But I think he's an overall better offensive player than Russell Westbrook. What I mean by that is his shot is more consistent. And when Russ gets the ball, he's gotten better. And sometimes when Russ gets the ball and he shoots, I'm thinking, hit or miss. With Lillard, I'm 110% sold. which is why I think the Blazers knock off the Clippers in seven.
You don't say.
I'm picking the.
You really think they're going to knock them out and face the Warriors in the second round? You sure you see
that? We know what's going to happen when they face the Warriors, though. Look. It won't be a sweep, but we know what's going to happen. I'm not afraid to say that I'm crowning the Warriors right now. Sue me.
Without
Curry? I don't care.
Without Curry, depending on his
without injury. Curry, I don't know. But Curry's going to play. Let's keep it real. Curry's going to play.
Yeah, he's going to play through it. And we got the Thunder and Mavericks next, which is probably the
sweep.
Most.
Yeah, skip it.
Sweep. That was just embarrassing. Spurs and Grizzlies playing today.
It'll go five games and someone's going to get a
Grizzlies going to show up, even though they have like pretty much no one on their team. They signed like players at 10-day contracts, but they got to find a way. Spurs just trying to be good for the second round.
Shout out to the Atlantic 10, though. Xavier Munford and Briante Weber, both from Rhode Island and VCU, respectively. Sorry, I had to do it once.
Then we got now the Eastern Conference, and we got Cleveland and the Pistons. And the Pistons had a show tonight, pretty much today, but they came up short at the end of the game.
Slightly. I think where the Cavs are concerned, they're not just going to walk to the finals. Sorry. I really don't think they are.
Me neither. I really don't, because I look at this series, and of course, Cavs are going to win this series. I believe they're going to win this series, of course, in probably five or six games. But there's just so many flaws on this Cavaliers team that the Pistons are actually exploiting as well. They are not well at defending the pick and roll, which is probably the one thing a lot of teams are attacking, because Kevin Love cannot defend in the pick and roll. And, you know, if you make LeBron just become a jump shooter, you have a chance. And also with Irving taking these long contested shots, because let's be honest right here. And I'm going to say this on the air, and I don't really care. But Irving is a ball hogger, and we all know that.
I said that from the moment they made the trade. There is no point. Let's not get sidetracked, because we will go on about this.
Well, I'm saying Irving is a ball hogger. Kevin Love is pretty much a Mike Miller three-point shooter in a power forward's body. And you got LeBron James passing the ball to everybody. That's pretty much what it is. And you got the Pistons that are a grit team. Van Gundy's going to play them hard. You know what Drummond's going to be. Tobias Harris, I thought, was a good pickup. He's certainly going to be in this series. And Morris, I mean, he's just showing up right now in the first game. So he'll probably do the same in the second game. But I see him picking one or two games. Maybe it'll be seven. We never know. Maybe they have something in their mind. They came up to this close today. But certainly, I believe that the Cavaliers will probably advance to the second round, and Pistons just going to have experience from playing in this.
I got to tell you, I really, the more I look at this starting lineup for the Pistons, the more I like them. I still think the Cavs are going to win in six, but Detroit's got a really solid lineup.
They're young, too.
Yes, Reggie Jackson, who didn't get much love in OKC, and then they still hate him over there. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, I saw him play in college. He's real.
He can play three positions.
He's real.
Yeah, he's good.
Morris, hey, shoot, okay. I didn't expect that from him, but okay. I've been waiting for Tobias Harris to make his way home, but thanks to the Kristaps Porzingis pick, Carmelo playing the three, and with Robin Lopez at center, it probably won't happen, but I've always liked Tobias Harris as a player. And Andre Drummond, the double-double machine. Still can't hit his free throws.
Yep.
But that's a very solid starting lineup. And you have Stanley Johnson coming in off the bench. Steve Blake, hey, you got him six assists. I mean, look. Yeah, that's a pretty solid team. But the Knicks wish they had something like it.
Yeah, but, you know, Van Gundy's doing a good job with this talent. And I think he has maybe had the edge over Tyronn Lue in this series. But
huge Cleveland, coaching edge. I don't think it's close.
Cleveland got the talent, though. So, and, of course, you got LeBron James, who's Coach LeBron, apparently. So, you know, he's just – they all know he's Coach LeBron. I mean, it's only a matter of time before they make him coach permanently and just forget about everybody else. But hopefully we'll see what happens in the second round with that team. But you got now Atlanta and the Celtics, and they won yesterday, but the Celtics lost pretty much a good player. It's, according to today's news – Brad Stevens saying Bradley will unlikely be out for the rest of the series due to a strained hamstring. When I saw it, I thought it was much worse, but it was his hamstring, and I think that's a big blow for the Celtics because, you know, the team's built basically out of role players with Isaiah Thomas being the star, but I think they had a chance in the series with him, and it looks like right now it might be either five or six games.
And, you know, I wasn't really drinking the Brad Stevens Kool-Aid until I saw parts of this game last night. This team shouldn't really, quote, be as good as it is. But when you look at the players that A, are really the heart and soul of this team, and B, the numbers they put up all around, you got to really respect it. Isaiah Thomas, 27. Avery Bradley, who I won't go as far as saying that he learned to shoot. I'm not going to give him that much credit, but he got much better as an offensive player.
Yeah, he did.
Jay Crowder, wow. If Dallas could do that deal all over again, maybe they wouldn't trade Jay Crowder. He had a double-double of 14 and 10. Evan Turner, why is he still in the league? But okay, he got you 10 points. And then Marcus Smart. I'm telling you, Marcus Smart's going to evolve into a really, really good player. And I think he's going to end up starting now, which makes the Celtics lineup pretty, pretty different, I think. But I think you're going to have a lineup of Thomas, Smart, and then Crowder, Johnson, and Sullinger.
That front court's going to be the deciding factor, though, because we know Atlanta Hawks front four, you got Hofer, Millsap, and you also got Bazemore, I believe. Yeah, Bazemore.
Kent Bazemore.
Well,
23.
Yeah, I mean, that's their front court is dominating the Celtics' front court. And we know the back court of the Celtics is okay, but, you know, with that blow now, it's going to take a hit. But you look at the Hawks' back court, you know, it's not as great, even though you got Jeff Teague. So if the Celtics got to compete in the series, it's going to be on their front court. And they're going to have to do something against that other front court, the Hawks.
I'm telling you, Paul Millsap might be the single most unappreciated player in the league.
Yeah.
He had a really crazy year this year. I think he was just the second player all time with 1,400 points in the season, 700 boards, 500 assists. I'm looking for the exact numbers as we speak, but that's what he's done. And back on those Utah teams where they were just so toolsy with him, Kirilenko, and Deron Williams even, He was kind of lost in the shuffle, but now I've really bought into him being a legitimate NBA top 25 player. And part of that is due to the little debate that Ray and I had before the show. I'm almost tempted to pose this as a question. If you want to tweet at us, go ahead and do so. Raymond's handle is
@Mornis10.
Mine is @NASONYE. This was a question that was posed on Twitter that brought up Paul Millsap in the first place. Carl Anthony Towns, is he a top 25 NBA player? You can also call in at 631-888-8811. You have about 15 minutes. Good luck. But he's not better than Paul Millsap, not with the year that he put up.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that was just, I was following somebody on Twitter. I'm not going to name him on the show, but he said that Carl Anthony Towns is a top 25 player, and I don't believe that as of right now because they haven't made the playoffs. And we know how stacked the Timberwolves are talent-wise, but they got to make the playoffs for first we save Andrew Wiggins is top 30, or is Carl Anthony Towns this or that. They got to do something in the playoffs first before we can do any of that. But you know, sticking with the playoffs, he and Bobcats Heat won today. Bobcats, pretty much they had a slow start.
I think it's a 5-game series.
Yeah.
I think it's a wrap. I love Kemba Walker, but I don't see it.
I mean, this Hornet team, they're good. I thought they'd make some noise, but this Heat team is just really stacked. Even if Chris Bosh is still stacked. You got Stoudemire off the bench.
Man, come on. If Chris Bosh was healthy, I think the Heat would go to the finals.
I still think they could compete against the Cavaliers without Bosh, but it's just going to be tougher now. It could be 7 games for all we know, if it comes to that point.
I really like the chances.
Then comes to this series, which I have problems with, which I'm going to compare to two other teams around the sports world, the Raptors and the Pacers. And the Pacers just won yesterday. And all I can say to that is, the Raptors, what are you doing? Because you're just blowing yourself another chance to go to the Eastern Conference Finals like last year. In the same situation, you're down. You're down one. It seems like there's a habit of you guys losing game one in the first place, but it's terrible when you have home court advantage. That's what you want. You want to lose on your first game. You want to win that first game, set the tone. But the Pacers set the tone on the road. And if they steal one more, it's only a matter of time before they sweep them. And I don't think they want to have that again.
Oof, you're calling a sweep. I think that's interesting. I think they'll come out with something serious in game number two. But it's weird, The Raptors and the Celtics are pretty similar in the fact that, none of them really have, in my opinion, a stud where you go, give him the ball. Let's see what he does with it. I think the huge difference is throw coaching out for a second. I think the huge difference is Toronto's a more advanced version of the Celtics, in my opinion, between Valanciunas on the inside. And then you have Kyle Lowry, who's evolved into a top-flight point guard, and DeMar DeRozan, he's seemingly been on the cusp. But the thing is, he's been on the cusp. When's he going to take that next step forward?
I think he's more of a second guy, though, to be honest. I don't think he can't be a go-to. I think he's more suited as a second scorer than the first.
So that makes Kyle Lowry their best player?
He's their point guard, and he's the one that takes control of everything.
Didn't answer my question. That makes Kyle Lowry their best player?
I believe so.
I
believe that so. But, you know, looking at the Raptors right now, comparing to two teams, the Raptors right now, if they lose this series, they're going to be the Bengals of the NFL, and they're going to be the Texas Rangers of the MLB. And the reason why I say that is because the Bengals, Rangers, and Raptors all have one thing in common. They're a very talented team together that falls short in the playoffs because either they choke, which I don't want to use, or they just fall to the pressure. Now, I'll give you an example. Last year, Raptors got swept in the first round. Bengals, this year, lost against the Steelers in the most – I don't understand how they lost that game, but I kind of knew it when you have their defensive player who just ran to the locker room like the game was over. And I said to myself when I saw it, the football gods are going to tell them they're going to lose this game because of that.
And let's not forget that Mr. Perfect really chose to try and take off.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just wrong. And then you had the Rangers, who are just a bad luck team in general. They couldn't even win a World Series twice they were in. And then last year, they were up 2, and they lost to the Blue Jays. And that's just bad luck for that team. I think the worst bad luck for them, for Ranger fans, was when the first time they went to the World Series against the Cardinals.
They should have won Game 6.
That catch, if he made that catch in the last out, the game would have been over, and he was this close, and he missed it, and they tied it, and then Freeze hit the home run, a goalless Game 7, and I still have goosebumps to that day.
That game was incredible. And the craziest thing about it was they still should have won the game.
I know.
Because Josh Hamilton smacked it in the top of the 10th. They should have still won that game. But I think the parallels that you drew are really, really appropriate. The only question is, will the Raptors even get forget the Eastern Conference Finals right now?
Yeah, the first round.
They haven't even been to the semis in franchise history.
Yeah, that's just – they don't get out of the first round. It's a problem with this team. Either the coach has to go or some players got to leave. It's one of those things.
And it's tough because there are other bodies on the team. I thought that Terrence Ross would have a much, you know, bigger year.
I thought so, too.
This year, he didn't even score 10 points a game. He was a shade under 10 points a game.
And to be honest, if they get to the second round, I give the Miami Heat an advantage over the Raptors.
Not even close. I don't think it's close.
Better coach, but just the chemistry they have, the players that they have. They're gonna have an advantage over the Raptors.
I really, really, really don't think it's close. The Heat are sneaky good. I do think the Heat are capable of going to the finals.
I know. Without Bosch, I still think that the Joe Johnson really helped them out. It's almost like they replaced Bosch, basically. But
they just chose to go a little smaller. Yeah. It worked out for them.
Yeah. And it's more pace now. They have more pace. Now they're playing at a higher pace, which is helping them out.
I'm telling you. I'm hoping Chris Bosh. I'm hoping there's a possibility.
I
know about his condition. If there's a possibility, the Heat versus the Warriors is going to be a really fun finals.
Well, the Heat, or maybe the Spurs, you never know. But that'll be interesting.
Slow down.
You never know. But we never know. But, you know, but the playoffs right now, you know, that's out of the way. We got a little bit of time here. I wanted to talk a little bit about this Jets schedule that I saw. And speaking of the strength of schedule, the Jets are actually tied for pretty much
seventh
in the toughest schedule in the league. And that's pretty much accurate because based on their first 10 games of the season, they are 6 games on the road. And for us Jet fans, we can say it's hopefully they go 3-3 or we're pretty much screwed for the rest of the season.
Facts.
Because, you know, they got home games as well. And I hope that they go 4-0 in their home games, but I don't think they will because they got some tough teams on the home. But I want to feel some home field advantage. This is the perfect time to do it.
You ready for an early, way too early, week by week prediction?
Yeah, with the team where it's frustrated right now. Yeah, I think
let's
do
this. Let's do it.
Week 1 versus the Bengals.
Loss.
Week 2 at Buffalo.
Loss. Because Rex wants it.
Kansas City.
I'll give him a win.
I think I'll give him a chance. Seahawks
lost.
That defense is going to destroy whoever quarterback. I don't even care. At Pittsburgh.
The ghost of Mark Sanchez haunts Pittsburgh instead of the Jets. Let's give that a win.
At Arizona, which is pretty tough to
loss.
Play. Loss. Versus Ravens. I give him a chance.
Let's give him a win.
Give him a win. Cleveland.
Better be a win.
Miami.
Loss.
Rams.
Win.
Win. Bye week. That's a win for them anyway. Patriots at home. Week 12. Sunday night football.
Go for it. Win.
We got to win at home. Versus Colts Monday night.
Loss.
At San Francisco.
Loss.
Versus Miami.
Win.
At New England.
Loss.
Bills.
Loss.
Loss. So, pretty much we have loss. Loss.
0-2.
0-2. Kansas City.
1-2.
1-2. So, Seahawks 1-3.
I got the records 1-3.
Pittsburgh.
2-4.
Arizona.
2-5.
Ravens.
3-5.
Cleveland.
4-5.
Miami.
4-6.
Rams.
5-6.
Patriots.
We gave them the win there, didn't we?
Yeah, we gave them the win.
6-6.
Colts.
6-7.
San Francisco.
6-8.
Miami.
7-8.
New England.
Wait, that my math was wrong. I'm going to go 7-7, and then 8-7. And then we said loss versus the Bills.
Yeah.
So, way too early predictions, 8-8.
Which is terrible. It's almost like whatever quarterback we have, we still go 8-8. But we'll see what they do in the draft, and we'll see what they do, and we do some trades maybe. But I know one thing. Wilkerson is on the radar to be traded because I think they're trying to get a quarterback for the future.
Cap room is just a killer because Muhammad Wilkerson makes that defense so much better. But then, this is a very interesting conversation for us to have, Ray, because if you had told me that Ryan Fitzpatrick has the year he's having, I'd call you a liar. I'd drag you to church and have Pastor lay hands on you. It was that serious. But I feel like the Jets are going to let it play out.
So you're going to play out the quarterback
battle? I think there's going to be battle between Geno Smith and Bryce Petty. Because I don't think Paxton Lynch is going to drop that far. Out of the three quarterbacks, which doesn't seem like a great class on paper, people are sleeping on this class. Because Jared Goff put up some crazy numbers at California. And then Carson Wentz at North Dakota. Listen, people have a very bad habit of taking prospects from smaller schools and saying, they're not going to be that great. I think Wentz, you win four national titles at an FCS school and no FBS school will play you. All the FBS schools they played with Wentz as quarterback, they won. It's that serious. So, Carson Wentz, how fun would that be?
Yeah.
So, with those two going projected top 10, rough projections, I'm not a professional mock draft anything. I don't think Paxton Lynch is going to fall that far. And I don't see the Jets making the trade to go up for him. And speaking of trades, shout out to the Titans. They robbed Los Angeles. They robbed Los Angeles.
They're trying to make a splash because of Kobe Bryant's retirement. But
LOLs.
It's going to fall flat on their face if it doesn't go well.
All I know is I don't think the Jets are going to trade up to get either of those three guys. And even if they do, that doesn't really fix anything. You might as well roll with what you have.
Well, the Jets got to do something because let me tell you something. As Jets fans, we need to understand that this is a year where they're going to have to make the playoffs because last year was a disappointment, and I don't want to deal with that crap again. That's this year.
Yeah, it's put up or shut up time.
So they got to do something. They got to trade Wilkerson. I know for sure they're going to trade for him because he even said himself he wants out for some reason. He's not going to go to the workouts, off-season workouts, so you know he wants out.
I don't blame him because they kept talking about trading him. I won't want to go voluntary workout either.
They would have traded Richardson, but he's on contract, and Wilkerson's making too much money. So with that being said, hopefully the team that they construct by the draft to be good enough to then contend with all these first 10 games of the season going to be hell because 6 road games is too much for one team to handle when you have 4 games on the home. So the way I see it, they got to go 7-3, which is a high expectation for them, or they got to go, you know, be around 500 and then just run the table in the last six games of the season, which I think they could do, especially if they got four games at home. So you never know.
And weren't you just talking about New York fans being too hard on their teams? Well, and you're out here saying that the Jets have to win now with a second-year general manager. Mike Maccagnan, we're already building your statue. And a second-year head coach, Todd Bowles, you're already in the ring of honor.
Well, I said it before. Us fans, we go hard on our teams for no reason. If we got a Jet team that's won in 40 years, which is just ridiculous. And those that even saw their first Super Bowl are now going to look at it and say, do we have a chance to get to the Super Bowl this year, or is it going to be like another year? Because let me tell you something, and I'm going to tell you this. The one thing that I'm going to say about this Jet team is that they're going to have to show a lot of grit, because last year they show instances where it's like, oh, you know, it's a business trip and everything's fine, all that stuff. And that's just a problem. They can't think it's like it's a business trip. They got to take it as, you know, it's a personal game, and they got to go to the playoffs this year. Because if they don't, like us fans, how we like to go hard on our team, we're just going to trash them every year. And it's going to be the same thing over and over again. And with that being said, I want to thank Christina Acker for being on the show about the Mets. Like Unqua Asanya is always talking about everything we got to talk about. And all for you listening out there, I'm just telling you the honest truth about how I feel, even though I'm a New York sports fan. It's sports here on Sports Talk 1240. Have a good night and watch the playoffs.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.